Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Critics Week, the grand finale on Soundcheck today. I'm John Schaefer, and coming up on the show, the top albums of the year according to our Soundcheck listeners, and the worst albums of the year according to one cranky old music critic. Plus, a live performance from accordionist and songwriter Rochelle Garnier. But first, debating the future of the music industry has become a national pastime, like arguing about sports or politics. And in 2007, we had a lot to argue about. Some of the year's most talked about albums were released by Starbucks, Walmart, and a British newspaper. Big labels lost big names like Paul McCartney and Madonna. And this band, Radiohead, drew a line in the digital sand and dared fans to cross it. Here to talk about the fascinating collision of business and technology and music in 2007 is Elliot Van Buskirk of Wired Magazine. He writes the music-oriented Listening Post blog for Wired.com. Elliot, welcome back.
Hi, thanks.
So Radiohead, let's start with them since they're in the background here. The release of the album In Rainbows. Why was this such a big story in 07?
Well, you know, for a lot of people, any Radiohead album's a big deal. But what they did was just unprecedented. I mean, they put up the entire album in pretty decent-sounding digital format, potentially for free. You could pay whatever you wanted, up to $99.
And when you say in pretty good digital format, no DRM, no digital rights management, the stuff that makes it impossible for you to move from one machine to another or from one person to another.
Exactly. And this is, of course, something that we all took for granted with the CD. You know, you buy any brand of CD player and you're good to go. So I think if they had used a, you know, DRM or some type of lockdown format, they would have lost a lot of the goodwill that they generated with this release.
So they generated goodwill. They seem to have generated good music. It's been a very, very popular record with critics at end of the year time. Is it a model? A potential model for other bands and for the industry heading forward?
I think yes and no, you know, which is kind of a tough answer to give. But, you know, I think it's the answer for Radiohead. And that's what their manager who came up with the plan, you know, when everybody started saying this is the answer to the music industry's problems. And he said this is the answer to Radiohead's album release in late 2007.
Right.
So I think the important thing for people to take away from it is, you know, the one of the ways they succeeded is by just throwing out the old plan and thinking from scratch what makes sense for us to do with this record in particular. And that, I think, is the lesson for other bands and labels to take away.
All right. Now, because the old model of putting out a record and waiting for people to go to the store and buy it is clearly not working. Once again this year, album sales dropped by about 15%, according to Billboard magazine. In January of this year, this was kind of a low light, I suppose. Dreamgirls was the number one selling album in the country with sales of less than 60,000 copies that week.
Yeah, just unprecedented.
So what were some of the bright spots, the highlights of the year?
The highlights, we saw the two of the major record labels, and this is something that, you know, some of us have been waiting for about a decade for, started releasing music without the digital rights management that we were talking about with the Radiohead release. So EMI released all of their music across the board in unprotected formats through iTunes and other places. And then Universal did some fairly intensive experimenting with it. And so all signs sort of point to, you know, this idea that music needs to be locked down finally going away, because all it does really is drive people to the free alternatives that don't lock you in.
Mm-hmm. We're also finding music coming from unusual sources. I mean, Kanye West and Alicia Keys, certainly the usual suspects, had good years, big selling records. But it seems like, you know, the top selling record this year, and it sort of depends on whether you go, you know, as Billboard does, from December to December, or as the Nielsen ratings SoundScan does, from the calendar year. But the calendar year's biggest hit this year was the Christmas record by Josh Groban. Is that a worrisome sign that Josh Groban, High School Musical 2, and Daughtry, three artists with strong TV ties, were topping the charts.
Right. I mean, I think what this shows is that the people, the albums that are doing the best are being bought by people who are not buying a lot of music. And I mean, these are not people who are hardcore music fans going out and thinking, this is the album for me to get this year. I'm going to save up and get this Christmas record. It's, you know, I think that the people, the more active music fans, the ones who really go out and track stuff down, they've just been all over the map. And I don't even know if it makes sense to talk about albums of the year anymore. Everybody's into their own thing now, it seems like.
All right, well, but this one record had to be album of the year, and it turns out to be this one, Josh Groban, and his album Noel, which has sold 2.8 million copies as of today. Obviously still counting, it's the season and all. Here's a little bit.
Christmas Eve will find you where the love light gleams. I'll be home for Christmas if only in my dream.
Almost 3 million of you people bought this record.
Yeah, it was Fievel Goes West soundtrack sold out this year.
We're speaking with Elliot Van Buskirk. He writes the Listening Post blog for Wired.com and looking at some of the big stories of music and technology and the music industry in 2007. One of the big stories you write about is the rise of ad-supported and sponsored music. What does that mean?
Well, it means two different things. I guess the ad-supported model, which is what Spiral Frog and iMeme and this company called Record Label Without Any Vowels are all doing, and that's basically, you know, you pay the label or the band some amount, whether it's a flat fee or a percentage of revenue, and then you put their music online for free and just put ads around it in various ways.
So it's like iTunes with ads instead of 99 cent per track. Pricing.
Exactly.
And for the consumer, do they pay like a monthly subscription fee or something
they
for this?
They pay nothing. In the case of
it's
Record Label,
free.
Which is, you know, Record Label, I guess is how you pronounce it. I don't even know. But in their I think they have sort of the most interesting thing going on along those lines. When you go as a consumer, it looks like a blog. It looks like a music blog, and you just download the MP3s the way you normally would. And whenever you embed their radio player or go to any of their web pages, you see an ad for one of their sponsors like Virgin Air and people like that. So you do see these ads, but the ads aren't totally obtrusive. I mean, I've used the site, and it kind of feels like your average music blog when you go to it, but it's just free music that they have paid artists up to $5,000 a track for.
So it'll be artists whose music is worth up to $5,000. You're not going to get Kanye West, I would assume, on Record Label.
Right. Well, not unless he wants to generate some Radiohead-sized buzz, I guess.
Okay. any evidence whether this is actually working yet?
It's so early. They launched last month, but judging from, you know, what the two people who launched it did before that, I mean, one guy is Pete Rojas of Engadget and Gizmodo. He launched both of those like blogs that are in the top of the world, and then Downtown Records has a long track record of doing well, and they're the other people behind this. So, you know, I haven't seen any numbers yet. But,
okay, but as
good.
You say, it's still early in the game. What about the sponsored music thing? This really was one of the watershed changes, it seemed, this in 2007.
Yeah, and what this is, you know, like the Eagles did, they said only Walmart can sell our CD. And this is smart because music, once you sell it anywhere, it starts leaking and it's all over the place. It's on P2P, it's on BitTorrent, it's on blogs. And so what really, one of the things that you can sell is the opportunity to have that music first. If it's going to be everywhere, where's patient zero? Where do I go that first day? And so that's where all the foot traffic goes. And that was so popular that other chains started buying the Eagles CD from Walmart and then selling it in their own shops.
Wow. And what about Prince, who went across the pond to do something really unusual with his record called Planet Earth?
Yeah, if you bought the Mail on Sunday, which is, you know, a popular newspaper over there, you would just get Prince's CD for free, not even a download. I mean, this is like the printed CD with a little bit of album art and a label on there, and it was just free. And the Mail on Sunday, I wish I had the exact number, but their circulation must have just been booming. I mean, especially because this wasn't just a compilation of songs that had been out for a while. This is brand new from a really heavy-hitting artist. So.
And boy, were the record stores in the UK ticked off about that.
Oh, just one more thing if you're a record store owner to complain about in 2007.
It was July that Prince released this album, Planet Earth, through the newspaper in Britain. Guitar is the song from the artist formerly and now once again known as Prince, from his 2007 release Planet Earth, released in July in the UK through the newspaper known as The Mail on Sunday. We're speaking with Elliot Van Buskirk, the author of The Listening Post blog on Wired.com, about the big stories in music and technology and business in 07. And so here you had music, brand new music, as you say, Elliot, from a heavy hitter in the industry through your Sunday newspaper. We also saw heavy hitters signing on with a coffee chain and with a concert producer. Tell us a little bit about that.
Right. I mean, this is incredible. First of all, the coffee chain, that's Paul McCartney. And he signed with Starbucks. And, you know, Starbucks has been doing a lot of interesting stuff with music, the free song a day on your iPhone or your iPod Touch. And, you know, they've been selling a lot of CDs. And I think they thought, well, why don't we just complete the picture and just start our own label? And I think it's such an interesting development, because what is the record label of the future going to look like? Anybody can release music using today's technology. So maybe it does make sense for any kind of store who wants to attract, you know, they wanted Paul McCartney listeners, so that's what they did.
And it's a kind of an interesting exercise in branding, too. It's like, this is our label. It's the Starbucks brand, and look who we got on it, you know, the Beatle.
Right. I mean, it's incredible. They don't even have the Beatles on iTunes, and they've got at least one of them in Starbucks.
Bizarre. All right. Now, what about Madonna?
Now, Madonna just turned her back on her label of, you know, that she's had since the beginning of her career. And went with Live Nation, which sells concert tickets, and that's what they focus on. They've bought the leading merchandise companies, and they've assembled this whole business around touring. And I think what it says a lot about is just the importance of touring now and concerts. I mean, her deal is all about the tour, and it used to be all about the record.
So this is again part of the new model. We've been talking about this on and off on Soundcheck for a couple of years now, how you no longer make your money off of your record and your record deal. The record deal becomes your calling card so you can tour, and it's the touring and especially the merchandise that you sell on tour that's the profit margin for many bands.
Exactly. And the labels, you know, don't think they haven't noticed. I mean, that's another big thing that happened this year is these 360-degree deals where the label gets a piece of everything that the artist does. And that's, you know, merchandise, T-shirts, tours. They tell you which venues to play. They tell you which guitar tech to hire. I mean, down to the details. And for some bands, you know, if you're a young band and somebody waves $500,000 in your face, you know, fine, you guys make the T-shirts.
So once again, though, Madonna, after all this time, finds herself ahead of the curve, because by signing on with a company that does exactly that, merchandising and touring and picking the hall and making the T-shirts and stuff, she's signed on not with a record company that's playing catch-up in all of those areas, but with a company that's been doing that all along.
Exactly, and a company whose contract with Ticketmaster runs out soon. So, you know, they're going to do a whole different they'll have a whole bunch of different stuff to offer her and more of cuts of her shows and all that.
All right, let's just quickly go through a couple of other big stories from the year. New royalty rates for internet radio.
Yeah, and the Copyright Royalty Board laid down these royalty rates that they've, you know, the labels have gone back on a little bit, but for big webcasters, this is it. This is it's over for them if this passes. And if you know, music radio does exist online, and you know, from big players like AOL and Yahoo, it's going to have a ton more advertisements, or it's going to cost you a monthly fee if these fees stand. So we're still waiting on that.
It's like it's an order of magnitude. I mean, it's not like a 50% increase. It's some. It's like 500% or something like that.
Right. It's
all right. What about the RIAA, the industry? You know, the recording industry. The RIAA, Recording Industry Association of America. There we go. They didn't make any more friends this year, did they?
No. That trend just continued and even got worse. The trend of them suing their customers, and they especially went after university students because maybe they don't pay as much taxes or they don't vote. I don't know why select them, but if you're a university student with an on-campus internet connection, watch out. You know, move off campus if you want to share files. I guess that's what they're trying to tell people.
Well, but and then they got this poor mother in Minnesota for like $250,000 because her kids had illegally downloaded and file shared
right.
some stuff.
Right, 24 songs downloaded and shared cost you $250,000.
All right. What about the bright spots, Elliot? The dawn of the connected music player, is that one of the highlights of 07?
Absolutely. I mean, we've seen MP3 players that can connect via Wi-Fi and stuff so that your songs update on your player. But of course, as with anything digital music, it kind of doesn't really count until Apple gets on board, you know? And this year we saw the iPhone and the iPod Touch, which are very advanced, you know, touchscreen, Wi-Fi compatible players. And although the music functionality isn't what it could be, you know, you can't stream radio over your iPhone through Apple, but it points the direction towards a lot more of this. And that's one thing I'm going to be looking forward to next year is seeing, you know, who else copies Apple. And when they do it, you know, they don't sell music. They don't have deals with the labels. They can add a ton more features. So I'm really excited about that. But definitely Apple's the iPod and iPhone, you know.
And bringing back the music video because, you know, that's how people are getting the music on these devices now. So we had, you know, a renaissance of that form in 07 as well, perhaps best indicated by the success of Feist and the video for the song 1-2-3-4, which, of course, was used in the iPod commercial. We've been speaking with Elliot Van Buskirk. He writes Wired Magazine's Listening Post blog. Elliot, thanks for the look back.
Thank you so much.
And happy holidays. Still to come on Soundcheck, another music critic gives us his list of the worst albums of the year, and then our listeners tell us which ones were the best as we reveal the results of our online poll. Later on Soundcheck, Rachelle Garnier. She traffics in everything from jazz to pop to accordion-fueled polka. She'll play some songs from her new album live in our studio in just a little while. This is Soundcheck.
My love is life. Runs his mouth and sleeps in his clothes. He done gone south. Oh, there he blows, my love.
We're just too busy being fabulous. Too busy to think about.
All right, so maybe the Eagles weren't so fabulous in 07. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Look, everybody likes the good stuff. Well-made albums, skillfully crafted songs, exciting live performances. But why should quality get all the love? As we wrap up our Critics Week, we acknowledge that 2007 saw its share of awful or just grossly overrated music. And joining us with his look at the worst albums of 2007 is Jim DeRogatis, pop music critic of the Chicago Sun-Times. Jim, welcome back to Soundcheck.
It's always a pleasure, John.
So let's start with the Eagles, since we started with the Eagles.
Well, you know, it's all relative. Let me preface this by saying there's a tremendous amount of bad music that comes out every year, you know, and there's a tremendous amount of good music. Most of the stuff is right in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm, right.
But to me, to really work up a head of steam about a lousy album, it has to have been an album that a lot of people, including my critical brethren and sistren, somehow inexplicably liked. I mean, I don't understand the amount of good press this Eagles record got. It's been 28 years since they made a record, and they come out with this thing which is just absolutely dreadfully dull, ponderous, preachy, Don Henley, you know, in full on, we have to save the environment, we have to change the universe, you know, I'm perfect, you're not, you should live like me, neglecting to say how it figures into it that the Eagles only sold this piece of crap through Walmart. You know, and Henley's father was a small business owner in a small town in the Midwest who was driven out of business by Walmart.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's just like the levels of hypocrisy were beyond belief. Plus, it was really, really boring.
So, I mean, back in the, you know, in the 70s, there was kind of a lot of creative tension among the Eagles. Is there none of that remaining 28 years later?
There's a lot of tension. They despise each other. There were a couple of articles written about pretty much, you know, they got together to make this album, and it reminded them why they hadn't done anything in 3 decades, because they all hate each other. You know, they made a lot of money from Walmart on this record, but there's not going to be a tour, and there's probably never going to be another Eagles album. They made that clear.
All right, well, but this one debuted at number one, and the fans loved it, but Jim DeRogatis did not. Sad, sad situation. Jim DeRogatis is walking us through some of the saddest of 07, his list of the worst recordings of the year, a sort of a fitting conclusion to our annual Critics Week on Soundcheck this week. Up next, a very different band, although also, Jim, you could call this a case of a reunion gone bad, and that is Iggy Pop and the Stooges.
Yeah, I tell you, I mean, this is one of the greatest bands in rock history. You know, their first three albums were absolutely perfect, and they, you know, pretty much laid the cornerstones of punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Raw Power, the first Stooges album, Funhouse, that's as good as rock and roll gets. You need those three albums. So to come back after 3 decades and call the band the Stooges again and try to pick up where they left off, and put out an album as bad as The Weirdness, it just breaks your heart. You know, and once again, a lot of critics were really, really kind to this record. I mean, I don't pay a lot of attention necessarily to what other critics say. I try to listen to a record, live with it for as long as I possibly can before I write my review and not take in much of the backstory. And then, after I've written a review, I go and I see what everybody else is saying, and often I wind up hitting myself in the head saying, they like this?
Yeah.
How could they like it? They like this because it was a good excuse to write about the Stooges, and you're glad to hear Iggy, you know, as he hits age 60-something with the original two members of the band, you know, play those great old songs again, but it isn't really the Stooges, and there's nothing on this record that has that groove that made those first couple of Stooges albums so incredibly influential. They don't groove anymore, and lyrics that used to be stupid in a good way, you know, no fun, my babe, no fun, are now stupid in a very, very bad way. Like that song Mexican Guy, where they're just, you know, Iggy's like upset because his girlfriend left him for a Mexican guy. I mean, it's not politically correct. It's offensive. It's not. I mean, look, I Want to Be Your Dog's not politically correct either, but
yeah.
It's un-PC in a very good way, as opposed to Mexican Guy, which is un-PC in a really stupid way.
So stuff that Iggy and the guys could have gotten away with when they were 21, 22, at age 60 is just not working for them the way it used to.
Well, they were better Stooges back in when they were 20 than they are now. I mean, maybe they know too much now, and they've lived too much, and I mean, you know, these guys aren't rocket scientists, but they can't really tap into that primal thing anymore.
Even though the album was produced by Steve Albini, well known for his work with Nirvana and many, many, many others, still something missing from this? Is it the songwriting at the end of the day?
Yeah, it's the songwriting at the end of the day. I mean, you know, Ron Ashton's guitar sounds like Ron Ashton's guitar, and Scott Ashton's drums sound like they did back in the day, although they're not grooving the way they did. Iggy sounds really good for a guy as old as him.
Yeah.
In great shape, and he's still... You know, I mean, he arguably sounds as good as he did at age 20, but the songwriting's not there.
Hey, baby, consider me. My home is
Iggy Pop and the Stooges. The Stooges record from 07 was called The Weirdness, and that song is called Trollin'. And we're looking at some of the musical missteps of 2007 with Jim DeRogatis, music critic of the Chicago Sun-Times. Hype is often, it seems, Jim, one of the things that gets an artist onto your list. Hype that is not lived up to. And there are a couple of examples. Let's talk first about the album by Björk.
Yeah, I love Björk. I mean, she's just a wiggy, crazy, eccentric visionary, you know. Sometimes she goes over the edge a little too much, you know, the famous swan dress. But for the most part, she's a really unique woman, a really unique artist. I did not like her new album. I thought it was, you know, she's been pushing the edge, trying to get more and more experimental electronically. And it doesn't work. There's this kind of, you know, overly artsy pretentiousness to it, of like, you know, you go into an art gallery and, you know, somebody has splattered, you know, blood on the wall, and you're standing there thinking, why is this art? You know, and the whole thing is just joyless and not fun, and not nearly up to her at her best.
But it's got a stellar group of guests. Timbaland, who's all over the place these days on her record, Anthony Hegarty from Anthony and the Johnsons, the sort of hip world music band of the moment, Kanono Number One from the Congo. So what about the arrangements with all these different sounds? Doesn't the album at least sound good?
Yeah, well, I mean, unless you're a stereo salesman, you know, I mean, who cares if it sounds good if there's no good songs? You know, I mean, that's kind of like the a very, you know, critics can sit around and slice and dice how good the, you know, the overdubbed Chinese pipa, which is a form of lute, which Björk was very proud to have power one song. I mean, you know, who cares? If it doesn't have a hook, you can remember.
All right, let's hear a little bit. The song is Hope from the album Volta, the 2007 release by Björk. Björk's 2007 release Volta was certainly full of unusual sounds. You can hear the West African lute harp known as the kora in very much in the foreground of this song, which impressed Jim DeRogatis not at all, apparently.
Oh, really? Are you gonna run out and buy it because the kora sounds so good?
You know, I kind of agree with you that it's not what's on the record, it's what's in the record, it's the songwriting. I happen to like this record a lot more than you did, but then I'm not alone. You, Jim, on the other hand, are very much alone, a lone voice in the wilderness with your list. At a time when other critics, if they're going to pan anybody, they're panning Britney Spears and Hilary Duff and, you know, J-Lo and Soulja Boy. So why are you picking on people who are trying to do something different?
Well, I think one of the dangers that the critics can overvalue is novelty, you know, and then there's also, it's something you haven't heard before, you haven't heard a kora on a record, and so you think, wow, this has got to be great. Well, maybe it's just different and new. That doesn't necessarily mean that it's great, and I'm not knocking innovation. I mean, that can be, but it can't be the be-all and end-all.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it just really annoys me when there's this kind of critical groupthink. I mean, you know, I firmly believe to the core of my being that we're all critics. Everybody's a critic. I don't want you to read me as some sort of consumer guide and only buy what I say to buy and only, you know, ignore stuff that I say to ignore. I mean, it's one person's take on this. But, you know, if we were to look at the reviews of some of these albums and put them all in the same typeface, cut them out of the New York Times and cut them out of Entertainment Weekly and, you know, 6 or 10 other newspapers and magazines, they all say the same thing. And it's like, buy this product. And there's no real discussion of the pros or cons of these records. It just, you know, everybody kind of gets excited and repeats the same critical common wisdom. And it's not unlike what we're seeing in the political campaign reporting right now.
All right, yep.
Huffy's on the rise.
All right, let's, talking about on the rise, Leslie Feist, simply Feist, had a big year in 07. Record was very well received. The song 1, 2, 3, 4, as we heard earlier, you know, used on that iPod ad. Feist's album, The Reminder, is on your list of the worst of 07. Why?
Because she has that really sleepy voice like that, which is completely put on. This record drives me crazy. And the fact that I have to hear 1, 2, 3, 4 every 35 seconds as I'm channel flipping just drives me crazy. And, you know, look, Leslie Feist was a indie rock underground electro clash provocateur. You know, she was Peach's sidekick. And with Peaches, she was devoted to, you know, some of the most scatological, you know, sexually in-your-face, absolutely over-the-top, annoying type music. I mean, you know, their purpose when they went out on tour was to get in your face and make you hate them.
Mm-hmm.
And then she reinvents herself as, you know, the indie rock Dionne Warwick. And like, you know, or Sade, right? I was like, I've heard Sade, I've heard Dionne Warwick, and you, Leslie Feist, are no Dionne Warwick or Sade. You know, and she bragged about recording this album in her pajamas. And I really think maybe if she'd actually, you know, put some clothes on, it would have sounded a little more energetic and better. I don't know.
Here's a little bit from Feist and the record, The Reminder. From the album The Reminder, hit record for Feist, a record that appears on Jim DeRogatis's year-end list of the worst of 07. Jim is the music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times, the pop music critic there, and my guest on Soundcheck occasionally when we need somebody to be cranky and ornery.
You know, why is this? You've got to come to Chicago. You're in the cynicism capital of the universe. Out here, you know, I grew up in Jersey City in Hoboken, right? And out here, I'm always getting these polite Midwesterners who are saying, you're so East Coast, you're so negative, you hate everything, right? And then New York has to come to me to give you some negativity.
What can I say, Jim? You've got it going on. That's now.
See, I like music. I want to make this clear.
I know.
I know
you do.
I had a prior time coming up with a top 10 list. I have a top 50 list. Go to jimdero.com. You know, I actually like music. I don't hate everything.
All right, but you do hate some things, and it's fun to talk about it. And there are plenty of other things we could talk about. But we gotta get moving here. And I want to announce the results of our listener poll in a moment. And you know, in our best pop album of 07, the MIA record did not win, but it came a very close second. It is on your list of the worst of 07. Please explain.
Well, I tell you, this is already winning a lot of critics' polls, and I think it's destined to win the Idolater poll and probably the Village Voice poll. It's Maya Apralagasm's second album. She's a Sri Lankan rapper born in and raised in London. You know, this is an amazing-sounding record, and I gave it 3 out of 4 stars when I reviewed it for the Sun-Times. Amazing-sounding. The backing music, which is largely crafted by this Florida DJ named Diplo, is this extraordinary globe-hopping amalgam of you know, Bollywood orchestral pieces and Italian disco beats and a chorus of Aboriginal kids.
I'm ready to buy, Jim. Why is it on your list of the worst?
Because she can't sing and she can't rap and she has nothing to say. I mean, if we had put a great rapper, you know, a Common, let's say, or a, I don't know, somebody old school like Latifah, or virtually, you know, any of dozens of hip-hop voices, male or female, on top of this incredible backing music, it could have been a masterpiece for all time. But she has no passion in her voice. She has no real inflection or flow or any of those pretentious words that hip-hop critics throw around. I mean, to me, her voice kills what is a masterful album.
All right.
She has no energy live either. She just stands there.
All right. Well, we're going to hear just a little bit of the MIA record, Kala. It's on Jim's list of the worst of 07. It's on our Soundcheck listener poll of the best of 07. We'll give you the winners of our poll in just a moment, but Jim DeRogatis, pop music critic of the Chicago Sun-Times, always fun to talk to you, Jim. Happy holidays. Thanks for being with us.
Ho, ho, ho.
Hey, hey, baby girl, you and me need to go to your TP. The moon is full and I'm shining, baby, I know you see me.
All right, well, you've heard what Jim thinks. Now it's time to hear what you think. All this week, Soundcheck has presented an unscientific yet revealing online poll of the best albums of 07. We scanned four categories, pop, rock, classical, and world, and without further ado, the best album in the pop music category is...
Meet you downstairs in the bar and your rolled up sleeves.
The troubled but enormously popular soul singer Amy Winehouse. She was our Soundcheck listener's pick for the best pop album of 2007 with her record Back to Black, a close race with MIA's record Kala. And looking in the classical music category, we had a runaway winner, Steve Reich's Music for 18 Musicians, performed by the Grand Valley State University New Music Ensemble, a student-slash-volunteer group from Allentown, Michigan, population 11,000, doing one of the landmark works of late 20th century music. In the rock category, we had another landslide winner, Radiohead's In Rainbows, which we heard earlier on the program, beating out Arcade Fire and Bruce Springsteen and others. And finally, in the world music category, it was the Latin alternative pioneer Manu Chao who took home the honors by a comfortable margin for his record La Radiolina, beating out Yusu Indor and Caetano Veloso and other heavy hitters. Thanks to everybody who voted in our listener poll. And in just a moment, we're going to take a look at a new record by Rochelle Garnier. She's actually going to perform some of it live in our studio.
Boy,